Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner with you today on the Thursday edition of the show. We're breaking down some of the SEC tournament scores and some of the matchups that we have set, but there's also been some other college basketball scores and tournaments going on around the country this week and today. Noah, some of the scores that have already gone final today, your boys from Indiana came back from 17 points down to beat Michigan to stay alive, trying to get into the NCAA tournament. What'd you think about that, man?
I washed my jersey, man. I wore it to play some basketball the other day. They lost to Purdue on Saturday. I didn't have the best shoe today, I'm going to be real. I played some basketball, so pick up basketball on Saturday. I was terrible, man. I was like 3 for 30. I couldn't hit the ocean. Oof. If I was standing in the water, to be quite frank with you. It was that bad. I'm glad I watched it, got the mojo off. Guess what? They beat Michigan, and I think they are very much still in the hunt to make the NCAA tournament. The bubble is weakening. And that's significant. Wake Forest losing yesterday, there is question as to whether or not they will make the NCAA tournament. The bubble is weakening. Boston College is trying to claim another. Miami is only up by 2 right now in the ACC tournament on ESPN2 at halftime. We saw what this looked like yesterday. Boston College is a-coming, right? The bubble is weakening. A&M just got to 21 wins. They are severely trying to rock the core of the confidence of some of these teams on the bubble. I think A&M with 21 wins, they look more attractive. But Indiana's win over Michigan. Michigan's now at 17-14. I will be shocked at that team. It's crazy to me. I think they're going to be, but I will be shocked. It just doesn't feel right. It does not feel right that a team that went 17-14 and lost in the first round of the Big Ten tournament, lost in their first game of the Big Ten tournament, that they're going to be allowed into the NCAA tournament. But the reality is, them beating Ohio State in the last game of the regular season did a lot of good for them and their mojo trying to make the NCAA tournament. And when we were talking a while back, I think maybe it was early last week, we were talking about the potential of Michigan losing out. And I picked Iowa to beat them in the midweek, and then Iowa ran them out of the gym. It was a double-digit game for pretty much the entire time. At one point, I think it was 20 points, and Michigan just kind of brought it back to 12. And I talked about the potential of Michigan losing out. They almost did, but that win over Ohio State could have them in the field. But I just don't like it. You go 17-14, that doesn't feel like a tournament team to me.
Oh, I agree. I think if you had to pick between Texas A&M and Michigan, you want Texas A&M the way they're playing right now in the tournament over a Michigan team who is 17-14. But Noah, they were up by 17 points on Indiana in that basketball game, and the Hoosiers come all the way back to win that game by 5. And like you said, the bubble is weakening. The teams that have been on the outside looking in, trying to get their spot in the final couple of spots on the NCAA tournament roster, they've all lost. And there was only a few spots up for grabs, but now it's new teams looking to grab those spots. And that was one of the biggest games today, was Indiana toppling Michigan after trailing by 17. Another big game was in the ACC tournament. Number 7, Duke played Syracuse. Of course, Syracuse is Buddy Boeheim. Their go-to guy, their superstar, was suspended after punching a player yesterday in the gut. He was suspended, but man, Syracuse came out and fought their tails off, and they almost won that basketball game. The score does not tell how that game went.
You know, it's crazy. We've seen Buddy Boeheim's, well, I don't know, COVID year may play into this. He may have another season. I'm not sure on that, but I think we may have seen Buddy Boeheim's last game in a Syracuse Orange jersey, which is wild to think about. And that occurred to me after this game concluded, that, and once he was suspended, I was like, he may have just been suspended for his last ever basketball game. And with as close as this game was, because it was within 2 points, I think, at one point, Syracuse even led by 7 at one point in this game. You wonder if it would have been different if Buddy Boeheim had played. And that's why there's the importance of not making decisions like Buddy Boeheim did in the Florida State game prior, and you could see how one player can make a difference. Syracuse has been on runs before. I mean, they got 28 out of the other Boeheim in 40 minutes. I mean, 3 players played 40 minutes for Syracuse. Another one played 38. So 3 players played the entire game. Another one played 38. Their 5th starter, Sidibe, played 17 minutes, and they only played 2 bench players. I mean, that's ACC basketball, man. There are a lot of coaches in the ACC that just don't play their bench. And Syracuse fit into that category. And if Buddy Boeheim had played, you probably don't have 3 players that play 40 minutes, a 4th that play 38. You would have been deeper off the bench. You would have had 8 guys, and it might have been different. I really think that may have Duke really was not convincing in this game. They weren't.
No, they weren't. And Syracuse was playing out of their minds. And Jimmy Boeheim, the brother of Buddy, he shot the lights out of the building. And that's not normally his style of play, but he picked up for Buddy Boeheim, and Syracuse was playing destined and determined to beat Duke without Buddy Boeheim. And you got to give them credit, because like you said, they don't play very many guys off the bench. That is Syracuse basketball. It is a 6-man, possibly 7-man rotation, but in the end, Duke ends up getting the 88-79 victory. TCU beat number 22 Texas in the Big 12 tournament. So
I'm back.
What's up?
That was a comeback.
Yeah, it was. And Texas has been sliding as of late. They're 21-11, and they're still ranked. They'll still make the tournament, but they are definitely on the downslope as they head into the big dance. And then, of course, Texas A&M, the 83-80 victory over Florida in overtime at the buzzer to advance to play Auburn tomorrow. And they're hot, and they're playing good basketball. So let's take a break here on the line. When we come back, we have some breaking news from Major League Baseball. You're listening to On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. On the line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner with you today on the Thursday edition of the show. I'm here in Auburn. Noah is joining us from Sylacauga. And as I teased before we went to the bottom of the hour break, we have some breaking news out of the Major League Baseball. Of course, the lockout has been going on for a while now. Opening day was pushed back. They took two series off of the schedule. But it is over. The lockout has officially ended, and baseball is back. They will have a 162-game season. And, Noah, the baseball season will happen. Unfortunately, the Braves will not be the final and last ever champion of baseball.
That you know of. They could win every single one from here out. I don't know what you're talking about.
We can only hope.
That's right, and you never know when everything will come to an end, and the Braves could be the last ones to have won it all. But you know, this is good. Baseball is coming back. I don't love a lot of the things that baseball is doing right now. I don't love everything that's happened the last couple of weeks. Pretty much the only thing that I'm kind of neutral towards right now with baseball is the fact that the bags are getting larger. I think that's kind of cool. Maybe I'm interested to see how that affects runs being scored, see if more stolen bases occur or more guys are called safe in close situations, but not a big fan of banning the shift. I'm really upset about that still, honestly. I'm really ticked off at the league. I really am. And it has driven – I wondered about this if because I've heard a lot of baseball people say, you know, or some people out there say that it was going to drive people away, that this was going to be bad for the sport, that you were going to lose some people. And then, you know, baseball purists are all like, let them leave. They don't like baseball anyway. It's like, yeah, man, good for you. Let's make your sport even more exclusive from people and further doom it, right? Because baseball is definitely falling behind compared to basketball and football, definitely. Maybe even soccer to a degree. I'm interested to see, especially with the younger audience, I'm interested to see what role all this plays and what viewership is like this year if they truly did lose a lot of folks and if there are a lot of people angry with the league and if the retaliation via boycotting and not watching games is actually a possibility.
Well, there's no denying that viewership, especially among the younger audience, is down and has been declining over the years for Major League Baseball, and that has to do with it not being very entertaining on TV. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I keep up with the scores during the season. I'm checking it every day, but very rarely during the regular season do I sit down and watch a baseball game on TV, man. I'm just being honest. I very rarely do. Now, the postseason, I watch every game, but it's very rare for me to sit down and watch a full baseball game on TV during the summer. I will if there's nothing else on because it's sports and that's what I like to watch, but baseball is doing some things that it is. It is turning away not only younger fans, but middle-aged fans, and even some of the baseball purists that don't agree with what's going on. And, you know, this new deal that they just approved on today, it has a designated hitter. There's a 12-team postseason. It also says it paves the way for the league to implement more changes, including a pitch clock, bigger bases, and a ban on the certain defensive shifts, as we talked about a little bit yesterday and just now. And these different changes, they're trying to keep up with the times, I guess, but a lot of these changes are just not, it's not it for baseball. It's not the changes that need to be made. There's other areas and there's other ways to change the game to make it better. And banning the shift is one of those, as you mentioned. It's a horrible decision, and you're literally banning a strategy. I compared it to banning the full court press in basketball because it's basically the same thing. You're banning a defensive strategy. So, Noah, I want to ask your opinion on the universal designated hitter. What is your opinion on that?
I like it, and I don't like it, and that's not a cop-out answer. I'll tell you what I like about it. I hate watching pitchers hit. So if you want to create the opportunity for more runs to be scored, if you want to create more excitement, this may be a way to move the needle a little bit, to have actually somebody that practices hitting on a regular basis, to have somebody that actually is decent at it compared to someone who bats 100. And granted, there are the unicorn pitchers out there that were pretty fun. Max Fried, Bartolo Colon. There were some guys out there in the NL that learned how to hit because they were career NL pitchers, right? But we all understand that it's going to be better for someone that actually is competent at hitting a baseball, right? Can actually hit 250 or 300 or something like that. I think that's better for the game in the long run. Now, I get the arguments made about, well, where's the strategy that's going to take a hit with strategy and whatnot, especially late games and situations and how you're handling pitchers and everything. I get that there is a strategy aspect to it, and that's part of what I don't like about it, because it was restrictive in a way. It made you have to think a little bit about how you were utilizing your lineups and when pitchers were going to be in the games and when you were going to pull them and whatnot. There was a little bit more strategy involved, but for the sake of the game and the fact that I don't like watching pitchers hit or try to, or not try to, really just stand in the batter's box and have 90-mile-per-hour fastballs, blanket the zone. Maybe we should change the name of when pitchers go to hit to bombardment, and it's just the opposing pitcher bombarding the strike zone, right? I think in the long run, this is probably going to make it a little bit more attractive. That's why I'm for it. But as most people can tell by my takes on baseball, I'm not a baseball purist. I played baseball for a large portion of my life growing up. I love the game of baseball, but I'm not as stubborn, I think, as a lot of the baseball community is. I'm just not as stubborn about it. I think that the baseball community can be incredibly stubborn. I think it's hurting the game in the long run and trying to appeal to younger fans. And they say, well, why is it important to appeal to people that don't even really like baseball? There's a possibility that you might be able to rope in some people that would like baseball, though, if we found ways to make it more entertaining and less boring. The sport is what it is, but it does take entirely too long. And I wouldn't say that there's entirely too many games, but there's just not enough urgency in baseball. There is zero urgency. Zero. You lose a game on a Wednesday night in the regular season in May, and you're like, yep, all right, we play tomorrow noon, right? Like, nobody, like, you're not living and dying with every pitch in the MLB season until it gets to September. But even in September, like, I mean, you've played so many games, you're kind of numb to it, right? And so I understand that maybe the argument that there's way too many games. I don't think they'll ever take away games. You make too much money from that. You've got all the ticket sales, and you've got that times 162, right? And then concessions and all of that, merchandise times, I really should say 81 because you get your 81 home games, right? So you're not going to forfeit that. They like the fact that they get that much coming in. It's a profitable venture. But for the fans, there's no urgency in the game of baseball. You play 9 innings. You don't start really feeling urgency until the 9th inning, and it's like, oh, well, it was too late at that point. You're down, 4-0, and you're like, all right, we'll get it tomorrow, And then it is the ultimate procrastination league. There is no urgency in the game of baseball. How can you engineer that? That is going to create excitement to me. There's urgency in basketball. There is urgency in football. In baseball, there's no urgency.
Well, there's no urgency, and it's the point that you hit on. It's because there's too many games. I mean, you play 162 games, and like you gave a perfect example, an example that I would say, when you lose a random game at St. Louis on a Wednesday night, you're like, oh, well, we play tomorrow afternoon. You said it exactly right. And like, I mean, how do you fix that? I don't know. Besides limiting the games, which, like you said, they will not do. They make way too much money. They've set the standard, and they're not going to come off of that. But
it's create urgency by shaving off two innings at the end. This is my hot take that everybody that I tell this to that loves baseball, they look at me like I just, you know, killed their dog.
I agree with it, though.
But let me break this down for you. If you disagree, that's fine. I'm okay with it if you disagree. I've heard it a million times, and I'm okay with it. Call in 334-321-1390, and I understand if you don't want to do this. And there are – I have had a few people come up with some legitimate arguments to where they're like, I don't want to do this. And I'm like, all right, that's fine if you don't want to do it. And a couple of those is, how are you going to handle statistics? Because we've been playing nine-inning baseball since the beginning of the sport. How are you going to handle records and things like that? Because that's going to significantly alter it. My response to that is just
adjust it.
Get over it. We did that in football. We the game of football had the pre-AP era and all that, and we got over it, right? I mean, we understand in the NFL that the game has changed from how often they used to run the football in the 1970s. Terry Bradshaw's still a Hall of Famer. That didn't take anything away of that. You just have to change your view of it. You know what I mean? Or you start the record books over with. You say now it's the seven-inning era, right? And you start the record books now, right? And sure, I just think that that's even in itself a stubborn thing to come up with, to be like, oh, I can't compare this guy's stats to Babe Ruth or somebody else. Like, oh, get over it. It doesn't matter, okay? In the long run, that doesn't matter. Do you want your sport to be watched? Do you want your sport to survive? Then maybe you should adjust in some ways. Here's the positives that I think changing baseball to seven innings creates. It shaves off a lot of time. It really does. It shaves off almost another hour, I would imagine. At least 30 to 45 minutes comes off of game time. You can still sell concessions, so don't worry about your concession prices dropping. You can still sell concessions to through the game, through the end of the game. And cleanup time, you'll leave by the end of when a regular baseball game would leave, right? So, like, you can still get that. You can still get all of your concession prices and get all of your concession sales in when you are already in your concession stand stuff at around the seventh or eighth inning anyway, right? So just still go through that time and just leave at the same time that you leave even earlier than you were before. Because you were playing two innings less in the baseball game. Additionally, you are going to have to pay – your payroll is going to decrease, I think. Now, you may end up being able to pay individual players more because there's more money to go around, but you're going to need less pitchers. You're going to need less arms. I think you're going to see some benefits for some guys out there. You're going to see less Tommy John surgeries, I think, because less guys are going to go far in baseball games. You're not going to be throwing – you know, you're going to see less eight-inning outings out there, right? You might just see – guys go five or six innings. It's going to protect some arms. Then you need a lower – your bullpen needs to be less because they only have to go, you know, two or three innings here on a given basis. Less rest, it's going to save you money there, right? I think in the long run, that's going to save you major money on payroll. It's going to create more urgency in the game of baseball itself because now all of a sudden you're playing in less innings and there's less – it's less boring because you're playing a faster game now, a quicker game. There's less time. There's less likelihood for people to check out. I would imagine most people leave a nine-inning baseball game to avoid traffic around the seventh inning. I would imagine that that's probably around that where that's at. Go to Plainsman Park, watch an Auburn baseball game, and see when the crowd starts to thin out. It's around that seventh inning.
I agree.
And a lot of people, you know, once again, baseball purists that love the game, don't want to see a change. They're going to respond with, well, we play nine innings so that everybody can get at least three at-bats. Why does it have to be that way? Who made that a rule? Why did everybody have to get three at-bats? Big whoop-de-doo, right? I think MLB teams could save a lot of money. It still allows them to play 162 games. Once again, my issue is not as much with the 162 games. It's with the game itself and how long it can be. And a lot of people hate it. I've had a lot of people push back on me with it, but I do think it would make the game more entertaining to make it shorter, to make it seven innings where every little thing matters and every little thing counts a little bit more.
Well, look, obviously that is not a popular take by any means, but I like it.
Heard somebody say it.
Yeah, I don't know if I have heard anybody say it, and I like it, though. And you brought it up a little bit yesterday near the end of the show, and I like it. I really do. I think it could help a lot of things. Because, man, going to a baseball game, it's a process. It's a long day. And by the time you get to the seventh or eighth inning, just like you said, you're like, if it's a blowout, you're thinking, hey, maybe let's go ahead and get out of here. Let's just miss all the traffic, you know? And watching it on TV, it's just like nobody sits down and watches a four-hour baseball game on TV hardly anymore. And I think making it shorter could very easily help that situation.
It creates urgency. That's how you create it. You shorten the game. It creates urgency because now every single out matters just a little bit more. There's more value in it. It creates urgency. That's why I like it so much. I also think there's some benefits to the organizations. Like, I do think you could save some money. Baseball's problem with having to pay so many people, though, is because they don't have a legitimate cap, right? They don't cap how much you have to pay a player. Of course, they have taxes, but
the richest team wins.
There are other teams out there, though, that, like the Yankees, that do not care, do not give a rip about the tax, right? Because they can pay it, and what they care about is winning. And that's why you see these astronomical deals and why it's so valuable when you become a big-time baseball player that you can make $300 million at the drop of a hat, right? I mean, it's wild to me, but I think you would shrink your payroll a little bit because there'd be less wear and tear on arms and whatnot, and you'd drop some pitchers off of your staff. I think there's a lot of benefits to it, to where I've heard enough responses from people to where I've yet to get something from somebody to where I'm like, that's a legitimate concern for me that outweighs the benefits that you could receive from playing just 7 innings of baseball. And, but no, people are too stubborn. All they want to do is play 9 innings. All right.
Exactly. And baseball is hurting itself. The fans are hurting it. The commissioner is hurting it. The officials are hurting it. Everything is hurting itself inside the game of baseball. And not wanting to create change and have change and make changes with the times, that's unrealistic in today's world. Whether you're talking about baseball, any other sport, or just anything in life, you've got to be able to change and adapt and evolve over time with what is going on. And baseball has tried so hard not to do that and to leave it at the exact same spot it was when it was created. And that's just not realistic, also, Noah. You know?
Think about the younger audience out there. And I lead a youth fellowship group at the church that I go to in Opelika. And during the playoffs last year, you know, talking to a lot of the youngsters and, you know, wondering about, you know, that they were all telling me about, you know, everything going on in the playoffs. These guys love baseball, right? That they just absolutely adore it. They eat it up, right? And that was really encouraging to me to see some of these young folks love baseball. But the commonality amongst all of them was they had to go to bed before the game ended. They had to go to bed around the 6th inning. They had to go to bed around the 7th inning for a lot of these playoff games that run late. It's like,
especially 6 o'clock first pitch, you know, 6, 7 o'clock first pitch. Absolutely.
Yeah. You got these kids got to go to bed. And so you've got this younger audience. And granted, those kids do love baseball and they play baseball right now. And I'm interested to see if they'll still really love watching the sport once they quit playing baseball down the line. But, you know, just cause as you know, I at one point really adored baseball growing up, but now it has definitely fallen in my rankings of sports I like to watch. I like to watch basketball the most, then I like to watch football, and then I would say it's baseball. And honestly, and you know this, I love soccer a lot too, and soccer is definitely pushing baseball for me at times in terms of excitement and whatnot. I think they're pretty close. And that just probably got a lot of people mad at me too, especially baseball fans, because baseball fans do not like soccer. Well, those two do not mix. But I just think seeing all these kids have to go to bed, while it was encouraging that they like the game of baseball, the best moments, they don't even get to witness it. They don't get to witness it live. And how can you further, you know, ensure the security of your game for the future? You appeal to young people, you appeal to the youth that care about the game and have the time to ingest it in their free time. Whereas adults, you know, we've got work, we've got all these other responsibilities. We're not able to ingest it as much as young people are. And they're completely closing the door on the younger generation.
Well, when it comes to watching baseball on TV, I gave my take on that a little bit ago. I'm going to give you my ranking before we head to break. Are you ready? I love basketball. That's my favorite to watch on TV or in person. Basketball is it. That's my number one. Football's number two. Hockey's my number three, man. Yep.
That's where you're going. Yep. Hockey's fun, man. We just don't have enough connection to it in the Southeast. We don't play it.
Yep.
I don't even know where you can go and play it. There's no, like, hockey rinks within, you know, 40 miles unless you go to Columbus. You know? There's no teams. Of course, there's the Predators in Asheville, but that's 6 hours away. There's the Florida Panthers. That's like 8 or 9 hours away, or however far, 10 hours. Tampa Bay Lightning. They're just not close, right? And the persona of it's not as fully an American sport. And I don't mean that in any kind of way. I'm just saying, like, there's less of a connection to it in the United States than there is to football or basketball or baseball, it seems. And especially in the Southeast, it's just not really a Southern sport. And we know that. And that's why it's fun to watch. Like, when you see playoff hockey, man, Doc Emmerich is one of my favorite commentators of all time. And I ate up playoff hockey, and it's fun, man. How could Southerners not love hockey? Think about that. It resembles football. People are getting their heads knocked off. You can slam people into walls. Okay, like there's constant end-to-end action. When somebody scores, they scream. I mean, the best moments, people could just come onto the ice at any point they want for substitutions. It's got basketball, football, soccer. It's got all of it thrown into one sport. How could you not love that, right? But there's no connection to it in the Southeast and little to no promotion of it in the Southeast. But, man, is it fun to watch, I think, especially in a live setting. I just don't know how people couldn't enjoy that, you know. But it's not promoted enough, and there's no connection to it in the Southeast.
Yeah, you ain't got to sell me on it, man. I'm already sold. It's an amazing sport. I do encourage, if you don't watch hockey, to at least try to pull it up and watch it on TV, or go if you have the chance. Birmingham,
it's all subscription based now.
I
know.
It's
all on ESPN Plus or Hulu. People don't care enough down here to do that, man. We got to take a quick break, though.
Yep, let's take a break. We'll wrap up hour number one here on the line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Just a few more minutes before we wrap up hour number one, and then we'll get into hour number two. If you've missed any of hour number one, just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. We'll upload it as soon as the show is over. Noah, we have just about a minute left, but I want to give the listeners a score update from the SEC tournament. LSU all over Missouri right now, my friend. 32-9 with just over 5 minutes to go in the first half. The winner goes to play Arkansas, and LSU is stomping the Tigers right now.
Woo! That's a football score right there, man.
That's probably what it would be in football, too, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Not right now.
Not right now, but
a couple years ago, yeah.
Yeah, the defense of LSU right now has held Missouri to 9 points in 15 minutes of the first half.
Regardless of who they played, I expected, maybe not this jarring of a result, but I expected the defense to flex its muscles. It's elite. Since LSU's gotten Xavier Pinson back, they've been working their way back to what they looked like at the end of non-conference play, the beginning of SEC play, which at one point was 3-1 in SEC play and a win over Kentucky. Like, that, they were a really good basketball team at one point. As much as SEC play has been topsy-turvy, we have to remember they're playing without their best guard, and we know how important guard play is. And with Xavier Pinson back, I think he's helping them get back to a caliber to where they could be kind of sneaky. And I'm interested to see them play Arkansas tomorrow. I think this is the team on Auburn's side of the bracket that they don't want to play.
Oh, I agree. And Xavier Pinson having a little comeback game, playing against his former Missouri Tigers team. He's got 9 points already in the first half. Hour number one is in the books. We'll be back for hour number two here on the line. Stay tuned.
You are on the line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn, and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line. You're on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you today on the Thursday edition of the show. Hour number two is officially underway. If you missed any of hour number one, once the show is over, just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. I'm here in Auburn. Noah is joining us from Sylacauga. And Noah, SEC tournament is rolling on. Of course, we had two games last night. We had one thriller this morning, and one game is in a blowout as of right now, but Auburn's matchup is set tomorrow at 11 a.m. Central Time. They will be playing the Texas A&M Aggies. Your initial thoughts on the matchup tomorrow for Auburn?
I think this is the ideal team you would like to play, especially considering A&M cooled off a little bit there at the end against Florida, but still a colossal malfunction down the last minute to allow Florida to get back into the game after being up by as much as 9 points with about 2 minutes left. Just absolutely crazy to see Florida be able to tie that game up, but then even crazier at the end, the look that Texas A&M got to be able to beat Florida. Just neither look at the end of the half. A&M had a chance for the last second shot, both at the end of the half, and I was not impressed with what Buzz Williams brought out of the inbounds, out of the timeout. They both times they inbounded it beyond half court. They walked it up for 5 seconds, burning half of the clock. Didn't get anything going really, and got two shots, right? And just one of them happened to drop, and it was an incredible shot by Hassan Diarra in a great moment of what makes the SEC tournament so much fun. I think Auburn would much rather play Texas A&M over Florida, just considering what happened earlier in the season. Now, this A&M team, a lot smaller than Auburn, gives up some size compared to Auburn. They're not the most gifted offensive team in the world, so that plays right into the hands of two of Auburn's biggest strengths, their size, their depth, their defense. So I like Auburn in that way, that Auburn has more scores top to bottom on their bench, even if this is a close game, even if A&M, you know, maybe forces Auburn into some turnovers, is able to equalize the game in that aspect. Maybe even A&M pops off a little bit from a three-point standpoint like they did today against Florida. I mean, A&M shot above 50% from three today. If they keep that going somehow into tomorrow, I still like Auburn in a close game because I think they've got more horses they can go to in a close game, whereas Florida, they've got some dudes that can score the basketball maybe a little bit better than A&M does. Of course, that wasn't the result today. A&M wins a close one. I picked A&M to win this game, and the reason why I picked A&M to win this game is that I thought they were going to do the things outside of offense that was necessary to win a game where both of these teams were going to be challenged offensively, and they did that. They rebounded offensively. They forced Florida into 18 turnovers. They had 36 free throw attempts. They found ways to find points for themselves outside of the run of play, and they made it count. And A&M, right now they're playing inspired. They need the win over Auburn tomorrow. Regardless, you were getting a team tomorrow with Auburn's draw. You were getting a team tomorrow that was going to be playing for their NCAA tournament hopes. You were getting an inspired team. A&M's probably the more inspired between those two teams, regardless of who won, just because of how long they've had to play for their NCAA tournament hopes. I mean, this is about 7 or 8 games in a row now that A&M has been playing for NCAA tournament hopes. They're playing incredibly motivated, but I still think this is a better matchup for Auburn than Florida. They seem to play right into Auburn's hands in a lot of different ways.
I think if you're Auburn, this is definitely the matchup that you wanted, was Texas A&M rather than Florida. A, because everybody saw how Auburn performed against Florida the first time around, where Colin Castleton had his way with the front court. B, it was a perfect situation because Texas A&M had to take it to overtime to beat Florida, so then they had to play extra minutes, which may or may not affect them. It can only help Auburn if you're looking at it from that standpoint. And then C, you're not playing a team who will have most of the arena. Florida had a lot of fans there this afternoon against Texas A&M because it's a 2-hour drive from Gainesville to Tampa, Florida, and now the Gators are gone. They're going home, and so Auburn fans should be able to have a pretty big presence inside the arena there in Tampa, so it won't be an away game almost as it would have been or could have been tomorrow against Florida. So I think if you're Auburn, you're ecstatic about how everything played out in game number one today, and you're playing a team in Texas A&M, like you said, very undersized. I think Auburn, just thinking and looking at it initially, I think Auburn's front court should have a big day. I think Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith should have big days tomorrow. And it'll be a dogfight, though. And as you mentioned, you have a very motivated Texas A&M team coming into this basketball game. They already have a game under their belt in this tournament on that floor, shooting on those baskets. So they're going to be very motivated. And as you mentioned again, they're playing for their tournament lives. And so this team is going to fight, and it's not going to be easy for Auburn. I don't see this as a 15 to 20 point win. I think it'll be a single digit win, but Auburn's athleticism and skill players and just overall talent is going to will them to a victory tomorrow, in my opinion, just looking at it, breaking it down. But of course, like I said, it's going to be a dogfight. They better be ready, because Texas A&M will be ready to play this game, because if they beat Auburn, they have a legitimate chance to make it to the NCAA tournament.
The bubble's weakening. There are teams that have not done what they've needed to do. There's Wake Forest that lost to Boston College yesterday. There's a few other teams that just right now aren't in a great spot and haven't achieved what they've wanted to. A&M winning helps push it. I mean, they're up to 21 wins now, and they're 21-11 in a really difficult league. They're above 500 now in the SEC. I mean, that's got to carry some weight compared to some of these other teams that have played in really, really weak conferences. Like A&M versus SMU, who deserves to be in the NCAA tournament? A 23-7 SMU team in an awful American Athletic Conference that at best could lose to Houston by 14, or a Texas A&M team that's won 21 games in the SEC and played was 15-2 out of conference? I think that's got to hold some weight, right? And so this A&M team now beating Florida, the issue is the Q1 record and the fact that they really weren't able to compete with a lot of the top teams in the league. And I think that trend continues tomorrow. I think they do lose to Auburn, but they are playing hard right now. The bubble's weakening. Even if they lose to Auburn, I still think they have a chance to get into the field. It just depends if some other teams maybe fall apart, some other teams lose a little bit too early in their conference tournaments. But for the most part, I mean, there's about three or four spots up for grabs, and there's more and more teams that are there. There are more and more teams trying to squeeze into those spots. There were a couple of teams like a Wake Forest, like a Michigan, that with wins could have easily locked up one of those two spots. Then they didn't. So now there's some residue from the teams that are losing that are also trying to squeeze into one of those spots. But then there are the teams that are in the next four out, or maybe even the first four out, like an Indiana and a Texas A&M today, that are pushing to also squeeze into one of those four spots. And then there's the teams that have held serve in the middle, an Xavier or an SMU, teams like that, that are right up there just caught in the middle, that if they just keep winning, although they may be played in that they have less sexy records, or they played in a weaker conference, a significantly weaker conference in SMU's stature, that they still are holding serve and doing what they need to do. The committee is going to have an incredibly difficult decision on Selection Sunday to figure out who's going to get in through the bubble.
Well, I'm excited to see what Joe Lunardi says over the next couple of days, because, of course, right now with conference tournaments, he releases an updated bracketology every single day, and he may not get the matchups exactly right, but as the days go on and we inch closer and closer to Selection Sunday, he's going to be able to tell you who's going to make it in and who's not. And I'm interested to see where he puts Texas A&M after a day in college basketball that we've seen some teams who should have won to get into the tournament lose, and some teams that were fighting to get in did what they had to do and won today. So I'm interested to see how it gets updated over the next couple of days. But of course, Texas A&M beats Florida 83-80 in game number one at the SEC tournament this afternoon, or this morning rather, on a buzzer beater or near buzzer beater from Texas A&M in overtime. So they will go on to play Auburn. The game going on right now, LSU up 39-23 on Missouri as the game goes to halftime. So as of right now, it's looking like LSU will go on to play Arkansas tomorrow. But then there's two more games this evening, Mississippi State and South Carolina, and Vanderbilt and Alabama. Noah, let's break down the Mississippi State-South Carolina game, and then we'll jump into the Vanderbilt and Alabama game. Your initial thoughts on Mississippi State-South Carolina, and what are you looking for tonight?
This is a complete toss-up. We don't know who's going to win this game. This is an incredibly difficult game to break down, but when we were talking about the SEC tournament last week, and you were asking me which double-digit seed or which first or second-round team do I think could maybe make a run, could maybe try and do something to get to the semifinals, be playing on Saturday, and they were asking similar questions last night as that on SEC Network. I said Mississippi State, and guess who's favored by 5.5 points tonight against South Carolina?
The Bulldogs.
The Bulldogs, they are, for all intents and purposes, for an SEC tournament basketball game, and for the way that South Carolina ended the season, and the fact that South Carolina beat this team by double digits the last time they played, Mississippi State's, you know, pretty solidly favored to win this game.
That's a big favorite.
200 on the money line and 5.5 point spread. I like Mississippi State in this game. Maybe not the cover. I would avoid this like the plague 100%, because these two teams.
You never know.
Well, and they're gross offensively. Let's just be real. My reasoning for Mississippi State being able to potentially make it to Saturday and play in the semifinals didn't have as much to do with Mississippi State as the other two teams that they were playing in their bracket, whether it be South Carolina or Tennessee. And obviously they're playing South Carolina today. They move on to play Tennessee if they win this game. Both of those teams are putrid offensively. 12th is South Carolina in field goal percentage in the SEC. Dead last, 14th is Tennessee. I think there's a real possibility that those two offenses don't show up. Mississippi State has some killers on offense, has some stone-cold scores. Tolu Smith, Garrison Brooks, Iverson Molinar. I mean, Iverson Molinar, I think, is the only player in Division I basketball this year that has scored double digits in every single game. I don't know if that record held up, but we saw that stat brought up in the Auburn basketball game, and he hit that in the Auburn basketball game. Mississippi State's not a bad basketball team. They've just had a lot of unfortunate losses, and I think this team finds a way through their physical brand of play. They're a more efficient team on offense. They shoot nearly 46% from the floor, whereas South Carolina shoots under 43%. Once again, I go back to the 12th in the SEC at field goal percentage. They rebound very well. They rebound 36.3. They get 36.3 boards per game. They hold opponents to around 30 boards per game, so they're out-rebounding their opponents. We know Mississippi State plays a slower, grind you out type of basketball game, and they do it very well. Defensively, they've been better than South Carolina this year. They hold opponents less than 67 points per game. South Carolina's holding opponents to 70 points per game. That they force more steals. They're creating more turnovers than South Carolina. I have a hard time finding any areas where either of these teams really overwhelm the other, but I give pretty much almost every facet of this game, I give pretty much almost every facet of the game a slight edge to Mississippi State. And so in my bracket, I'm rocking with the Bulldogs to win this game. I think they lose to Tennessee tomorrow just because Tennessee – I just don't think anybody really compares outside of the top four. I don't think anybody really compares to the top four teams we have in the SEC. And that's true in a lot of conferences compared to this top four in the SEC. But when you were asking me the question for a team that maybe could shock and go on a little bit of a run and make it to the semis, I put Mississippi State in there in case a Tennessee or a South Carolina doesn't show up offensively. But so far at this point, 33 games done in the SEC tournament, the teams that have won have all shot above, they haven't all shot above 50%, but they've all fared pretty well shooting the basketball. A&M shot 53% from three. Vanderbilt beat Georgia by 35, scored more than 80 points. Missouri shot 54% from the field. All three teams that have won have fared and have shot the basketball really well. It's been a little bit of a binary approach. One team has shot the ball really well. The other team has not through our first three games. And I wouldn't be shocked if that trend continues here. And I trust Mississippi State to be the team that's going to be more clinical on offense than South Carolina.
Well, I don't think we can expect either one of these teams to shoot the ball very well tonight because their stats would say that they don't. And the two stats that I look at is South Carolina's free throw percentage as a team is 67.4%, which is good for 308th in the country. Woo! And Mississippi State's three-point percentage is 29.3% as a team.
Three threes per game.
Which is good for 347th in the country. Yes, they make 3 3-point shots per game.
Ugly.
That's ugly. That's horrible. And those two stats, so I mean, I guess if you're South Carolina, just pack the paint and make Mississippi State shoot from outside. And if you're Mississippi State, just hack a South Carolina. You know what I mean? Just make them shoot free throws because obviously they can't make
Gamecock.
Them. Yeah, hack a Gamecock. And I think it's going to be an ugly game. The implied final score, given the spread and the total from Yahoo Sportsbook, is the implied final score is 71-66 Mississippi State. That's an ugly game, man. I think it's going to be another slow, lot of turnovers.
Another Missouri Ole Miss.
Another Missouri Ole Miss. You're exactly right. And it is. It's a coin toss. I would give the edge to Mississippi State, but if South Carolina comes in here and wins, I'm not going to be like, wow. I'm going to be like, well, you know, it was literally 50-50 in my book. So
this Pat Bradley yesterday, I don't know if you stayed up into the wee hours like I did last night watching SEC Network, but I watched the SEC Network. I watched SEC Now after the games wrapped up, and Pat Bradley said that they asked him the question, I fill in the blank, I wouldn't be surprised if. So he would not be surprised if this happened. And he said he would not be surprised if three teams from the second round advanced to play in the semifinals on Saturday, meaning three of the top four seeds would go down on Friday.
Meaning three teams from today would make it to Saturday.
Exactly. Meaning, which a better way, I think, for us to phrase that would be that three of the top four seeds would lose tomorrow.
That's wild. I did not see that take.
I would, A, be very shocked if that happened. B, I don't think that's happening. It would be chaos. Absolutely wild. If a combination of three teams here, Auburn, Kentucky, Arkansas, and Tennessee, if three of those four teams, any combination, lost. Because think about the teams that they'd be losing to. Auburn losing to A&M. Tennessee losing to Mississippi State, Kentucky losing to either Alabama, which isn't as crazy when you've seen the teams that Alabama's beaten, but when you look at the matchups there, Kentucky should run Alabama if they play Alabama, or it would be Kentucky losing to Vanderbilt in my bracket, because I got Vanderbilt winning tonight, and then it would be Arkansas losing to LSU, which you're like, yeah, that could happen, or unless somehow, you know, by miracle, Missouri comes back. I just don't think that all three of those things happen. The SEC, I would be seriously concerned about the league going into NCAA tournament time if that happened.
Oh, I would be extremely concerned. And if you asked me what three of the four top seeds would be in that scenario, I would put Auburn losing to A&M. I would put Arkansas losing to LSU. And I would put Kentucky losing to either Alabama or Vanderbilt. I don't think Mississippi State or South Carolina could beat Tennessee just because of their defense. Not that Tennessee can score very
Tennessee has grilled South Carolina every time they've played.
Exactly.
And the score between Tennessee and Mississippi State in the regular season was actually fairly close, but they absolutely grilled South Carolina in their two meetings. So
exactly. So
you're right. Mississippi State and South Carolina offensively play exactly into Tennessee's hands.
And so I think Tennessee will beat either one of those teams. So if I had to pick for that scenario to come true, it would be Tennessee to win and the other ones to lose. But don't get me wrong, that's not going to happen, folks. That is extremely crazy if it does happen. I will be extremely concerned if that happens, especially for Auburn's sake. If they can't beat Texas A&M tomorrow, then, I mean, who are they going to beat in the NCAA tournament, you know? But, no, I don't think that happens. I could see maybe one of them losing. The biggest one would be LSU over Arkansas would be the game. If I had to choose one of the top four seeds to go down, would be LSU over Arkansas, of course.
I think all four of them win. That's my hot take.
I think they do, too. But if I had to choose, it would be LSU over Arkansas. But, of course, LSU still has to take care of business. They're up big on Missouri at the half right now, which I don't see them blowing that. But, no, I don't see that happening. But the Mississippi State South Carolina game, to go back to that, I think it's going to be another Ole Miss Missouri. I think it's going to be sloppy. I think it'll be close, but again, you just really never ever know.
With that being said, I hope that South Carolina doesn't do something dumb and move on from Frank Martin. I've seen some discourse about this. Frank Martin's got a young team, and he had them playing some good basketball at the end of this year. I mean, they went 9-9 in a really difficult SEC.
They played Auburn tough.
10-12, right. They played Auburn tough. They have actually a good winner, too. I mean, they beat LSU, you know. They went 18-12 overall, 9-9 in the SEC. If they lose tonight, they'll be 9-10 in the SEC and 18-13. You don't fire a coach who's got a young basketball team after something like that. And sure, they've had a couple of down years since they went to the Final Four, but this is the best. This may be the best basketball coach that South Carolina could fathomably get. You don't move on from Frank Martin. This guy knows how to win at South Carolina. He's engaged. He loves South Carolina. You stay with that coach who bleeds garnet and black. you stay with that coach instead of moving on. I hope they don't do something irrational or hasty.
Oh, I
just
agree.
Because South Carolina is not doing some of what the other teams are doing. South Carolina is not a basketball school. I would. This is the ranking that I would put for South Carolina sports. They're a baseball school primarily.
Women's basketball.
We're talking about the big three sports here. Gotcha. But you know, they're a baseball school primarily, I think, then a football school, and then a basketball school. I mean, basketball, I think, is the least significant of their three major sports. Some people may think that's crazy. Baseball number one. They care about their baseball up there. And let me tell you, there are some people up in arms about South Carolina baseball right now. There's some real people are already hitting the panic button in Columbia with South Carolina baseball. If you're not paying attention, this team's after this weekend, when they get an angry Texas team after what happened to Texas State last night, because Texas lost in the midweek.
And I saw
Texas
that.
Texas State went and just flamboyantly just went ballistic and did all the horns down stuff and everything. And then they're going to get an angry number one team in the country coming to South Carolina, and South Carolina's on like a 4 or 5 game losing streak, just got swept by Clemson, which is, you know, it's a good baseball program. It's decent, but like, they're not of the caliber of like the top half of the SEC. I don't think they get swept by Clemson and then they lose by 8 to Xavier in the midweek, a cold weather team that's just kind of meh out of their own conference in the Big East. Let me tell you, things are trending in a bad direction for South Carolina baseball right now. There's a lot of unhappiness in Columbia. I follow a lot of SEC accounts, and there's some real unhappiness right now with that. I'm sorry to go on a tangent there, but just giving everybody a baseball update for anybody that didn't know what was going on. That's significant, relating that back to Auburn. That's significant because Auburn's SEC schedule, features, I think it goes Ole Miss, A&M, and then South Carolina. Auburn will be in a favorable position, I think, after the first couple of after the first three series of SEC play.
Let's head to a break here on the line. When we come back, we'll break down the Alabama-Vanderbilt game as the nightcap in the SEC tournament tonight. You're listening to On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner with you today on the Thursday edition of the show. Just a few more minutes before we head to the national break at 3:30. Then we'll be back for just 30 more minutes before we wrap up. And then the drive will be on at 4 p.m. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Noah, we can talk about some SEC baseball now or in the next segment. I'll let you choose, my friend.
We can talk about baseball later.
I want you to have your time to talk about it. So we'll get to it when we come back from the 3:30 break.
I think to really save a lot of it for tomorrow, just getting people ready for another weekend series. This is the last non-conference series for SEC baseball. It's sneaking up on us. Conference play's coming around. It's always that first weekend of the tournament that you've got, the second rounds being played on the days that the conference tournament opens. So there's stuff to keep an eye on. I'll say this about Auburn baseball. Great win last night over Tennessee Tech. Now people may be saying Tennessee Tech. Look, they were undefeated coming into yesterday, and the lone like team of, that you recognize on their schedule, you're like, oh yeah, that was a good baseball team. They had a game postponed, had a game suspended. They were in the fifth inning against Tennessee, and they were holding their own. 5-4 was where it was postponed from. Tennessee Tech was undefeated going into last night's game. Auburn had to come back from down like 3-0. They win the game 4-3. It's a good win for Auburn. That's a good baseball team at Tennessee Tech.
And I was listening to the radio broadcast on the Auburn Tigers app, listening to the radio broadcast, and I was like, and I got online and I looked at the score and they were down. And I was like, wow, and I was kind of shocked to see that Auburn was down, but then I tuned in right at the correct time because that's when they went on their little rally and ended up taking the lead. And from what I heard on the radio broadcast, it sounded like there was a full house of Auburn fans because the game was played in Huntsville, so it sounded like it was almost a home game, but I think it was a tremendous win for Auburn to pick up in the midweek before they have, like you said, their last non-conference series this weekend. So Auburn baseball, if they can wrap it up and finish out with wins in the non-con schedule, like we talked about, and head in to the Ole Miss series next weekend, I think Auburn baseball will be in pretty good shape. Not great, but I think better than what most people expected to this point.
100%, the second best record in the West, man. It's finding ways to win games. That what's key here is they, in some close outings this year, they have found ways to win close ones, right? You already think to the to the Yale series. Auburn won two games by one run or less. They open up the year, they lose a close one to Oklahoma, and you think, oh, here we go again. This Auburn team's going to fall under pressure like they did in all the close games that they had last year. But then they followed it up with a one-run win over Texas Tech. That found a way to then they just got explosively hot after that. And then they played Yale, had 2 1-run wins in that series. Now you've got your counter up to 3, another 1-run win over Tennessee Tech to bring the counter up to 4. Absolutely knocked the socks off of Rhode Island, UAB, and Alabama State last week. This team's winning close games. It's different than last year. I'll tell you that. Last year's team might have lost some of these games. And that's a big reason why you're seeing Auburn right now at 11-2 or 12-2 or whatever they are right now, as opposed to some of the other teams in the league that have been losing close games. Poor old Mississippi State, they're 7-7. Defending national champions are 7-7. Texas A&M, not in a great place. Alabama, not in a great place. I mean, there's some – South Carolina is another team I talked about. I guess we got into SEC baseball this segment. Auburn's in a much better place than other teams in the SEC are right now. Now, they're definitely not – I don't know if I would throw them in the top half of the league yet, but I definitely think that they are in the top – I think they're the top team of the bottom half of the league, if you will. Like, they are knocking on the door of – in my mind, if they do what they're supposed to, if they do what I think they're capable of in SEC play, they will be a bubble team for the NCAA tournament. And most of the time, more times than not, SEC teams on the bubble – they get into the NCAA tournament. There's some room for optimism with this baseball team just because they keep finding ways to win.
Well, so let me ask you this. Is it time for the SEC West teams to signal the alarm of, uh-oh, like, is it?
No, definitely not, because SEC play hasn't even gotten started yet. I mean, the teams in question right now to talk about, that aren't playing well. Alabama and A&M, I don't know if either of those teams were legitimate NCAA tournament teams from the start. Alabama has lost two out of their three midweek games to date at this point. They lost, let's see, let's bring up the schedule. I know they picked up a loss yesterday, trying to remember who they lost to. They lost yesterday to North Alabama 9-5. They've lost to UT Martin 7-6. So they've lost two out of their five, midweek games. So they're 3-2 in midweek games. They were swept by Texas, which they held their own a little bit, and they've got Binghamton this weekend. But Alabama was picked to finish fifth in the SEC West. And I questioned whether or not that was legit, because I questioned this team's bats outside the top four players in the lineup. Alabama, I don't think, is going to be an NCAA tournament team when it's all said and done. I don't think A&M is either. So I don't know if there's really a signaling of the alarm there, because I don't know if those teams going into the year, that was really the expectation. They were kind of out there on the fringe. Arkansas has not done a good job of hitting the baseball. They've had a lot of close calls with some really bad baseball teams, namely this past weekend when they played Southeast Louisiana and lost 3-7 in the series opener, only won 4-2 in the second game. And, of course, they blew the door down 11-1 in the last game, but got blown out by Stanford 5-0. 2 weeks ago, lost a game to Illinois State, wasn't overly impressive in that opening series of the season. Arkansas is just not hitting the ball well. That needs to improve going into SEC play, but I don't think it's time to panic. And Mississippi State at 7-7, they won 1 out of 2 against Texas Tech this week. I don't think it's time to panic for those teams, because we know they've got dudes, we know they've got players, but they definitely have to improve rather quickly, because SEC play, yeah, it's a week from now.
We'll head to break, and we have just a few more minutes left, 30 more minutes left here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Little score update: LSU up 41-30 on Missouri. The Missouri Tigers trying to make a little comeback on LSU, making it interesting there in the SEC tournament. 30 more minutes left. You're listening to On the Line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins joining you from Auburn, and Noah Gardner joining us from Sylacauga. We have just 30 more minutes left on the Thursday edition of the show. Noah, I have a stat for you before we jump into some bubble talk of the NCAA tournament. The last time that Florida had a losing record in football and missed the NCAA tournament in basketball was what year?
Oh, man.
1979.
Wow.
It's kind of crazy, huh?
I was trying to think the last time they had a losing record in football, which was, you know, over the last 10 years. But I was like, I don't know if they missed the NCAA tournament at basketball in that stretch either. That's interesting. Florida, I will contend with this. Florida is definitely one of the best all-around athletic programs in the entire Southeastern Conference. They have won a championship in football, basketball, and baseball all in the last, 20 years, all in the last 25 years. That's incredibly impressive. I think since the year 2000, because I know football and basketball have. I'm trying to remember, when was the last time that baseball has won a national championship. I mean, no other athletic department in this league can say that they've done that.
No, it's extremely impressive. I saw that stat scrolling through the break, and I was like, wow, I wanted to make that known, because that's a testament to Florida athletics. That's not a down thing at all. That is a testament to how legit all Florida athletics have been.
Yeah, they won the championship in 2017 in baseball.
Okay, that's right. That's right. And then back in the 2000s, football and basketball.
Yeah, and so when you talk about the athletic department, just general success and winning in baseball, constantly Florida is one of the best teams in the SEC. That is a program under Kevin O'Sullivan that's rolling. Basketball, definitely right now, I think is going through one of its more lean periods since Billy Donovan. We're well removed from Billy Donovan now. There's less success with the basketball program. And there's question as to whether or not Mike White is the right guy to lead Florida basketball. We're definitely removed from where Billy Donovan had this team as one of the best teams in the SEC. Gone is that era of SEC basketball. And, of course, football is definitely not where it was with Urban Meyer and the championships that they had back in the 2000s. So we're a little bit removed on both of those areas, and that's why you see a stat like that. But I still will say this. Florida's one of the best athletic departments in the entire SEC. I mean, think about this. Have we seen sanctions come down on this athletic program? Like, do they get in trouble? They don't get in trouble. They win in every single sport. I mean, their fans just have a great time year-round. I mean, they get to watch winning programs on a year-in and year-out basis, and they're always in contention. I would argue, for the most part, they're in contention to do something in the postseason. Maybe not a national championship in football by any means, but I mean, they've gone to an SEC championship. They went to like three or four SEC championships in football over the last decade. They've been good in basketball in the last decade, and baseball, of course, won a national championship in 2017. I mean, no other team in this conference can boast what Florida can in its athletic department.
There's no doubt. I saw that stat and I was like, wow, that's actually crazy to think about. Again, Florida, the last time that they had a losing record in football and missed the NCAA tournament in basketball was the year 1979. So really just an interesting stat there to give you. But Noah, let's take a look at the bubble for the NCAA tournament. Joe Lenardi's bracketology, this was updated at midnight last night or this morning, however you want to say it. And the last four byes were Michigan, Rutgers, Notre Dame, and Creighton. The last four in, Wyoming, Wake Forest, Xavier, and SMU. The first four out was Indiana, Dayton, BYU, and Virginia. And the next four out was Virginia Tech, VCU, Florida, and Texas A&M. A lot of those teams have been in action the last couple of days.
Well, the three teams that I think you would put up, well, really the last four in is on the chopping block right now. There is some real worry there for each one of those four teams, two of which have already lost in their conference tournaments in the first round. Xavier took a horrendous loss to Butler. And the reason why I bring up these four teams is because I think there are four spots open in the bubble. Maybe Michigan's loss to Indiana today puts them into that last four in category. But there's nobody that's off of that last four in category currently, a Wyoming, a Wake Forest, Xavier, SMU. None of those teams in my mind have done anything to be characterized as a last four bye team either. So I don't think that Michigan is going to fall into the last four in category. I think all of those last four byes, the teams that don't have to play in the first four, I don't see them losing. I don't see them falling out of that. I think they make the NCAA tournament. I think they're all pretty safe. Now, when you talk about the last four in, Wake Forest and Xavier should be concerned. Wake Forest losing to Boston College yesterday and Xavier losing to Butler, it's out of their hands. And when you look at what Wake Forest has done this year, we'll look at them first. And I think Xavier's the team. If you asked me which of those teams I think deserves to be in the NCAA tournament more, I would say Xavier over Wake Forest. And here's why. Wake Forest, their best non-conference win, they played eight non-conference games, their best non-conference win is either Northwestern or Oregon State. Oregon State won three basketball games this year. Three. They won three basketball games.
That's bad.
And Northwestern was one of the bottom four teams, one of the bottom three, one of the bottom two teams in the Big Ten this past year. They played, you know, other teams like Kennesaw State, North Carolina A&T, Charleston Southern, Western Carolina, William & Mary, South Carolina Upstate, VMI, Charlotte. They played a horrible non-conference schedule. And then they get into conference play, and I think you would say their best wins, they beat Notre Dame over the last 3 weeks. They beat them by five, but that was at home. And they beat North Carolina at home by 18. But this is a team that has now lost to Boston College, Clemson, Syracuse, and Louisville, teams that I would say are not good losses for this team. They've got Louisville, Boston College, and Syracuse, and Clemson. All of those teams, with the exception of Clemson, have losing records by six or more games right now on their overall record. That's not a good look. Not a good look at all. And I don't think that they've done enough to warrant getting in. So I think there's a clear bubble spot there to where maybe someone from the first four out, probably in Indiana, who won today over Michigan, is going to weasel their way into the last four. A&M probably moves up a line with their win today over Florida to the first four out. I would imagine that's probably where they stand. And they're amongst a group of teams now in Dayton who still doesn't know who they're going to be playing tomorrow in their tournament. BYU, I don't think, is a legitimate factor considering they lost early in the WCC tournament. I don't think they're legit. And then Virginia has an opportunity today, I think, to make a really convincing case. They'll get to 20 wins if they beat North Carolina, and it's a ranked North Carolina team that got really hot at the end of the year that has 23 wins and is securely in this field in my mind. If Virginia wins against North Carolina, that's the late game in the ACC tournament tonight. If they beat North Carolina, I think Virginia is another team that is a contender for one of those last four in spots. If not, there are two that could be available. And then Wyoming. Terry's called into the program and talked about Wyoming before. Wyoming has really played poorly down the stretch. They lost to San Diego State, UNLV, Colorado State, New Mexico. all four of those losses coming over the last two or three weeks of the season. Of course, they have a couple of close calls, close wins in there against some okay teams like a Nevada or a Fresno State. They play UNLV in the Mountain West tournament today at 4:30. That's a must win. If Wyoming loses that game, they're not making the NCAA tournament. And then the other team I think in question right now, Xavier, I know they play in the Big East, but let's count it up. They've had two wins over their last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 games. They're 2-8 over their last 10. That includes losses to DePaul, awful. St. John's, not good. St. John's twice, not good. And Butler, awful. That includes some really bad losses out of the Big East. I don't care how good the Big East is. I don't know if Xavier's done enough to warrant being in the field over some of the teams that are trying to get in from the next four out, that being Texas A&M. You're going to want to see what the bubble looks like tomorrow, but I'm going to be real. A&M's getting dangerously close to squeezing in. I think Indiana has done enough with the win over Michigan. And Virginia, if they win tonight over North Carolina, you could see three brand-new teams in the last four in on the bubble tomorrow. And then the last bubble team that I think should be concerned at this point is SMU. SMU still playing in the American Athletic Conference tournament. They don't know who they're playing tomorrow. They beat Tulane by 6 today. Their best win on the resume is Houston. That's the best win out of any of the teams on the bubble right now. And they won by 2, and that was back at the beginning of February. But they really didn't do anything in non-con play either. Their best win in non-con play was Vanderbilt. This is a team that lost by 5 to Missouri, lost to Loyola Marymount, one of the bottom feeders in the WCC. I don't like this SMU team over a Virginia or an Indiana or a Texas A&M. But right now, that's where Joe Lunardi has them. But I think the bubble, it's really shaky right now. And I think there's some real opportunity for some teams on the outside to come roaring in, especially if Virginia wins tonight against North Carolina, you could see three new teams in the field.
Well, we have 3 days to go, and I agree, man. I think the bubble is going to be shaken up quite a bit in these next few days until right down to Selection Sunday on Sunday afternoon, evening, when the selection committee finally gets their bracket put together. And you broke it down tremendously. I like Indiana's chances to get in now that they beat Michigan today. Virginia still has some work to do. I think, like you said, they won last night, okay? They won their game last night, and now they have a ranked North Carolina team in the ACC tournament. If they win that game, I think they're in. I don't see how you keep them out after they beat North Carolina tonight if they do. And then, of course, the big one, on the next four out, Virginia Tech, they won in overtime last night to advance in the ACC tournament. They probably need another win or two in the ACC tournament to make it in. And then the big one is Florida and Texas A&M. Of course, they played this afternoon. Texas A&M, they won 83-80 on a near buzzer beater in overtime. And so Texas A&M, obviously they still have some work to do, and we've talked about this, but beating Auburn tomorrow would be a fantastic stepping stone.
It puts them in the field if they win tomorrow.
I think so.
With the fact that two of the last four in having lost, and SMU's resume is not that sexy out of the conference that they're in, and the fact that Wyoming still could lose today, the fact that three teams in the last four in literally can't do anything else to improve their resume, and the last thing, I mean, let that resonate with you for a second. The last four in currently is not playing anymore. There's only two of the four, and they're pretty weak, right, in Wyoming and SMU. That you can overcome those teams if you're in Indiana or you're a Virginia or you're a Texas A&M because of the leagues that you play in. The fact that Wake Forest and Xavier can't do anything to build their resume, and the last look that we got at these teams was Wake Forest losing to a 13-win Boston College, and they've had some bad losses down the stretch as well, like a Clemson. And then the last look that we got at Xavier was going 2-8 over their last 10 games and losing to Butler yesterday, 89-82. I'm going to tell you, the fact that they can't do anything and the other teams on the outside are still playing, I think Indiana's played their way into the field already. I think they've already done enough to take one of those teams out of the last four in. And then Virginia, if they win tonight, I think they're in the field as well. And A&M, a win tomorrow, I think it puts them in. But I'm curious to see what A&M's win over Florida does for their argument right now, because A&M's a 21 win team. I think you can make an argument that A&M should be in the field already,
and I think they should be as well, especially just how they're playing down the stretch. And to your point, exactly, the last four teams in the tournament, they're not going up. They are not going up. The only way they can go is down, and not being able to play and back themselves up really hurts them. And I think some of these teams, the eight or nine teams that are trying to get in, are going to push those other teams out. And I don't think Texas A&M beats Auburn tomorrow, but with the bubble shaking up as much as it has, I think they've done enough to get into the tournament. I don't see Virginia beating North Carolina tonight. I think North Carolina's playing extremely well, playing that's good basketball.
That's a sneaky Elite Eight team.
It is. Sneaky Elite Eight for sure. But Virginia's going to give them struggles just because of how Virginia plays basketball. They're a very slow, stingy defense. But I think North Carolina gets that win, and I don't see Virginia making it into the tournament because they won't be able to do anything else. And then, yeah, I mean, if you look at Virginia Tech, they have a chance to get in as well with another win or two in the ACC. So it's going to be interesting. We have a few more days to see how this is all going to shake out. Noah, does Indiana have their matchup for tomorrow yet?
Let's check and see. I'm not sure if they do because they were the early game today. So I would imagine that we do not know who they're playing yet, but I will check for you, and we do not know.
Okay, so who are their possibilities to play? I'm just curious to see what game they would need to win next to fully solidify themselves to get into the NCAA tournament.
Let me pull up the Big Ten bracket real quick. I don't have that in front of me right now.
Yeah, well, while you're
there are double byes in that bracket.
Right. Well, while you're doing that, the only reason I ask is because Indiana, they're still, you think they're in with the win against Michigan, but another win tomorrow would
they
100
play Illinois tomorrow.
Oh, that would definitely put them in. If they're somehow able to beat Illinois, it would be a 100% guarantee that they make the NCAA tournament. I don't see that happening, but yet again, they came down from 17 down against Michigan today to beat them. So anything's possible in March, my friend.
I mean, you say that you can't see that happening. I get it. They lost by 17 at home when they played them back previously this year, and they've actually got the size in the front court to, you know, run with Indiana's front court and Trace Jackson Davis with Kofi Coburn. That kind of negates what Indiana does best. And I don't know if Indiana's backcourt's good enough to overcome what Illinois' product is on defense either. I think it's a bad matchup for Indiana, but I don't even know. I don't think Indiana needs tomorrow. If they win, they're definitely in, but I don't think Indiana needs tomorrow. I would take Indiana over Wake Forest or Xavier right now.
I agree, especially they are the first team on the first four out. They got to win. The other teams in front of them have not. I think Indiana's in. I was just curious to see who their matchup was. And again, if they beat Illinois tomorrow, they're 100% in. But I think Indiana's in the field anyway. Let's take a break here on the line. When we come back, we'll wrap up the Thursday edition of the show. You're listening to On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins and Noah Gardner with you today on the Thursday edition of the show. Just a few more minutes before we get out of here, but make sure you stay tuned for the drive at 4 o'clock. And stay tuned because they'll have everything broken down from the SEC tournament and much, much more. So make sure you stay tuned to that. A little score update from the SEC tournament itself. Missouri had come within 10 of LSU, but LSU has now exploded. It is a 57-36 lead with about 8.5 to go in the second half. So it's looking like LSU is going to play Arkansas tomorrow. Noah, let's break down the nightcap game tonight, the one game we have yet to talk about today. It's Vanderbilt and Alabama, and we both have the Commodores winning tonight, but what's your outlook on this game, and what are you expecting to see tonight?
Alabama's pretty substantial favorites tonight. 5.5-point favorites over Vanderbilt, 230 on the money line. Vegas is expecting Alabama to win, and I get that. They are more talented than Vanderbilt. They have more scores to go to, especially out of their backcourt. They have more guys that maybe can pop off other than Vanderbilt, who has to get a good game out of Scottie Pippen. The reality is Scottie Pippen is a closer, man. That guy's playing really well. And I think something that I talked about earlier this week when I was breaking down why I thought Vanderbilt could go through and maybe upset Alabama, and why I said the winner of the Vanderbilt-Georgia game, whichever team won that game, we knew they were going to have scored. We knew they were going to have scored a lot of points because both of those teams are gifted offensively. We knew they were going to have had to have shot the basketball well. And I think one day already, and knowing the lay of the land, understanding the backdrop, understanding the sight lines, already being comfortable playing in Amalie Arena in Tampa gives them an advantage over Alabama tonight. And considering both of these teams like to take and like to take a lot of threes, I was about to say take and make, but that's really only a Vanderbilt thing. Vanderbilt likes to take and make threes. Alabama likes to take and miss threes. Considering that is considering so much that bakes into being able to shoot the ball well in a foreign environment, it's kind of just your overall comfortability and understanding the backdrop and knowing all those things. Vanderbilt's already got a leg up on Alabama in that way. I've also talked about the mismatch there and the way that these two teams defend the three. Bama already doesn't shoot the three efficient enough, but they still take a lot of them. Vanderbilt defends the three very well, so I wouldn't be shocked if Alabama misses a lot of threes tonight and Vanderbilt goes over there and hits a lot of threes because Alabama doesn't defend the three well. That matchup right there, considering both of these teams are so perimeter-focused, that simple matchup right there, that's why I think Vanderbilt can win tonight. I think they I would say they at least cover for sure, but I think they will win and move on to play Kentucky.
Well, I've talked about the X factor for Vanderbilt. I did a lot of research on this. He is the obvious X factor, and it's Scottie Pippen Jr. The guy can just flat out play basketball and score the rock, and I think he's going to burn Alabama tonight because they don't play defense. And Scottie Pippen Jr., he can not only shoot, he can make plays. He's a scorer. He's a passer. He's a little bit of everything that you look for out of a star player in the SEC, and I look for him to torch Alabama's defense tonight. And I know, obviously, this Alabama team is, you get one of two things. You get the team that shoots lights out, they play extremely well, and they beat teams like Gonzaga and Baylor and Houston. Or you get the teams that shoots 30 times a game, shoots 33s a game, makes three of them, and they lose to Georgia, the worst team in SEC history. So which team is going to show up tonight? Honestly, you don't know. You have no idea. And that's what is almost frustrating about this Alabama team, if you're an Alabama fan, player, coach, whatever, because you really just don't know who, what team is going to show up. I have a feeling that we could see Alabama come in there and play good tonight and come out with a 7-8 point win, but I like Vanderbilt to keep it close tonight just because they have Scottie Pippen Jr. They do play a little bit of defense, and
I mean, they hold opponents to 66 points a game.
Exactly. And if Alabama continues to shoot the ball poorly as they have the last few weeks, Vanderbilt has every opportunity and chance to win this game tonight down in Tampa. And the point you bring up, they've already got a game under their belt down in that arena. That benefits them greatly. I hope it's a good game because, man, we've only had one good game so far in the SEC tournament, and it's kind of frustrating.
It's definitely not been exciting, to say the least. I mean, obviously the first game today set the tone, but following it up with LSU Missouri, but you expect that. It's a 12-5 matchup. The 12 seed in the SEC is horrible compared to the 5 seed in the SEC, and we knew that was going to be a bad matchup considering how elite LSU is on defense. But Vanderbilt definitely sets the stage for a good game tonight against Alabama, another potential upset. I will say, I think in my bracket, you're going to have two double-digit seeds playing tomorrow in the quarterfinals. That's not something that I've seen a whole lot of people predict. I think you've got upsets on the bottom of the bracket, and I think you've got chalk on the top. Now, I think all top four seeds advance, and we'll talk about that tomorrow, and we'll already have had a couple of games or one and a half games done probably. Auburn's game will be done tomorrow before we get on the air. So we'll already know to a degree, kind of how the picture looks for the semifinals, even when we get on the air tomorrow. But I think all four top four seeds advance to the semifinals, and I think that's where you're going to get some really attractive basketball. Just wait till the weekend. The weekend's going to be where it gets really good, a Saturday and Sunday. To me, this is a four-team tournament. Everything that's happening right now is just the undercard. Just wait till the main event.
Oh, I agree. And, no, I hate to break it to you, but I will not be with you here tomorrow. I will be on play-by-play for Auburn High Baseball, so it will be you, my friend. But since I will not be here tomorrow, I do want to go ahead and give my weekend picks for the SEC tournament. And
go for it. You got 20 seconds.
Hey, I can get it in. Don't you worry. Look, the top four teams are going to make the weekend. They're the top four are just completely separate from the rest of the SEC. I like Auburn to win against Arkansas. I like Kentucky to beat Tennessee. And then I like Auburn to beat Kentucky on Sunday and become SEC tournament champions. But that's going to do it for the Thursday edition of On the Line. If you missed any of the show, just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. Noah, you'll be back here tomorrow. Have a good show. And everybody, stay safe. We'll talk to you later.